Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. All right, we're done with voting, but we're not done with figuring out who won the vote. We're going to talk about that with two of the smartest people who I kept thinking about all week, and I'm glad that we could bring them on to add some insight and analysis. I certainly learned from both of them. Lynn Vavreck from UCLA and Brian Goldsmith will both be with us a little bit later. But we begin by talking about Veterans Day with somebody who cares a lot about vets. Somebody you may have heard of before. Arnold Schwarzenegger is back with us. He told us he would be back, and he is back at the VA in West LA, taking care of the vets. Here's our story with him.
Look at that couple. Huh?
Arnold Schwarzenegger takes selfie after selfie.
Smile.
I am.
With veteran after veteran.
Oh, yeah.
At the West LA VA. What's your main message to all these vets on Veterans Day?
That we are there for them, we will fight for them, and we will, make sure that their issues are being heard.
Former California governor sponsors a Veteran Day barbecue, and the vets couldn't be more grateful. What's the message being sent to you?
That there's people out there that actually do care about the veterans because we defended this country.
It feels like it brings the world a little bit closer together.
This is the greatest Christmas gift.
Last year, we were on hand as Arnold visited 25 tiny shelters he donated for homeless vets via the nonprofit Village for Vets. You said last year you'd be back to keep going with this, and here you are back again. I mean, this is a commitment for a long time, right?
Well, we say two movie lines here. Yeah. One is that I'll be back, and we also say hasta la vista, baby, to the problem that we have here.
Last year's story went viral, reaching 20 million people, and many of them reached out to Village for Vets to donate to build more tiny shelters. Because of that, they were able to build 17 more, and say with additional funding, they can do even more to help homeless vets.
There's a lot more that needs to be done.
Rebecca Rishi is with Village for Vets.
It's not just as easy as opening a door and giving someone a home. They need that consistent support.
Some of those shelters burned down when a lithium battery was plugged in. Thankfully, those have all now been replaced by insurance. Still, it's clear the situation isn't perfect.
One guy came up and said when it was raining, we had to walk around in the mud and in the rain and in the water and stuff. So, you know, I want to hear all of those things.
Most say this is way better than living on a tent on the street.
I just want to tell you my appreciation for the little houses you did last year.
You're welcome.
Michael Hefty lived in a tiny shelter sponsored by Schwarzenegger.
All right, good.
Now he's getting a personal haircut from the Terminator.
When you go home now, everyone is going to say that you are a sexy, sexy guy.
Did that give you a sense of hope?
Oh, yeah. It definitely sets you on track to see what's better for you. So it's helped me out a lot.
Schwarzenegger hopes this event inspires others to say thank you to vets.
I look at each one of their faces and I say to myself, I'm standing in front of a very, very courageous person. If it's a man or woman alike, they fought for this country. They fought for our freedom.
Our thanks to Arnold Schwarzenegger and to all of the vets. Now let's talk about the other big story of the week, of course, the election. Here's Joe Biden.
The press and the pundits are predicting a giant red wave. It didn't happen.
President Biden feeling good after one of the best performances in the midterms by any modern president, although plenty of races still too close to call. We've got what a panel here to break it down. Two of the smartest people in politics that I know with us for the very first time on The Issue is Lynn Vavreck. She is a professor at UCLA. She is a New York Times contributor, and she's the author of the new book called The Bitter End, The 2020 Campaign and the Challenge for American Politics. Brian Goldsmith is back with us. He's a media and political consultant with Kona Media. He needs to write a book, and then we could advertise it. All right, welcome both of you. Great to have you both here together. Lynn, let's start with you. And this is a topic you get into a lot in your book, this idea of red and blue waves. And is that even possible these days? Because we have a lot less swing voters than we used to.
Yes, I think that the age of the wave may be dwindling. It doesn't mean it's over forever, but I would say right now and in the short term, people are pretty stuck. We call it calcification in the book. They're stuck where they are. The other side is really far away, and that makes it kind of unappealing for people to think about crossing over. There are swing voters, but they're a smaller segment of the electorate than they used to be.
And so what's the strategy then, knowing that, for the campaigns?
You're playing at the margins, and you're playing in the states and the places where you can win. I mean, this election wasn't just a battle between Democrats and Republicans. It was a battle between the old politics of low Biden approval rating, high wrong track, economic dissatisfaction, and the new politics of extremism, particularly on the Republican side, calcification, as Lynn says, where people are stuck where they are. And that explains some of the Democratic overperformance we saw relative to historic norms.
But then when you really look at it, and even a lot of those states, the basic performance is about where Joe Biden was at, about where Donald Trump was at. There isn't these huge swings because, to your point, people don't really move. They vote for their party.
Well, yes, and you make that sound like that's a bad thing. But I just want to say that, you know, part of what's happening is there are two very different worlds on offer from the Democrats and the Republicans right now. People see those differences, and they know what kind of world they want to live in. And so there's a lot of clarity for people. Oh, that's the world I want. So, you know, being stuck voting for one party doesn't necessarily mean that people aren't being represented or getting what they want.
And because another point you make in the book is because it's like a 50-50 country and people see it that way, Brian, people feel like, I got to get out there and vote. And we see a lot more people voting.
We saw higher turnout. And it's not as though the economic and political forces didn't matter. The Democratic coalition did fray a little bit around the edges. But at the same time, the Trumpification of the Republican Party meant that even if you slightly disapproved of Joe Biden, even if you're a little bit dissatisfied with the direction of the country, you're not going to, you know, walk miles and miles from your own worldview, as Lynn says, to support the other side.
And then another thing that we saw, Lynn, that was interesting is that maybe because of that, incumbents did especially well, especially here in California. A few may lose, but most are looking pretty good at this point.
Yes, incumbents had a good night. And I think that goes hand in hand with saying that people understand what kind of world they want to build. There was a big shuffling. Incumbents haven't done so well recently. But we've reshuffled onto this new dimension. We're fighting over these person-based, identity-based issues. And now I think you're going to start seeing incumbents do well again.
All right. Well, we are going to talk about a lot more, including the L.A. mayor's race, Governor Newsom, Trump DeSantis, which is probably the most interesting conversation.
Madam Vice President, what's your message to the people of California and L.A. today?
We as Californians always are engaged, and let's be engaged again today. Today is election day. There is so much on the ballot. Let's vote for Karen Bass.
What does it mean for you to have the Vice President here with you of all days on election day?
I told her it means the world to me to be here. The message that sends, that the way we are going to solve our problems in L.A. is to make sure that all levels of government are aligned. And how more aligned could we be than to have the Vice President of the United States here?
On election day, I spoke with Congresswoman Karen Bass and Vice President Kamala Harris. All the top national Dems backed Bass in the L.A. mayor's race, but early results show that race is very, very close. Back with political analyst Brian Goldsmith and Lynn Vavreck. Brian, we're going to be getting more ballots sort of trickling in over the next few weeks on that race. What's the smart way to look at those ballots as they come in?
Well, the smartest answer is we don't know. The second smartest answer is Caruso owned the top issues, crime and homelessness, and to a certain extent, affordability. And Bass owned the coalition, the constituencies that normally power a victory in an overwhelmingly Democratic city. Caruso's spending, his ability to get his message out, meant that the two were kind of evenly matched going into Election Day. And so this is anybody's race.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite something, Lynn, because the Democrats make up 60% of Los Angeles, and she's backed by the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the Speaker of the House, every basic national leader, and yet he's right there. I mean, $100 million helps.
Yes, persuasion is hard, but every effort that you can make to connect with voters, whether that's advertising, spending $100 million on leafleting, knocking on doors, that all helps. It's an arms race, and so you never want to cede that ground to your opponent. And so I'm sure that in addition to all those, I thought that was a great analysis Brian gave.
Like,
that's the best thing I've heard anyone analysis of this election.
Yes.
But in addition to that, the electioneering, the money definitely helps.
Yeah, and one of the things when we saw in the primary is that Karen Bass's lead kept growing the more ballots that were counted. Rick Caruso saw that happen. He invested $13 million in this Get Out the Vote campaign, had 400 full-time staffers just working to get out the vote. The question we got to find out in the next few weeks is, did they? Was that good money spent?
Well, and the question is also, is this a traditional kind of red versus blue race where the late male comes in for the sort of Democratic nominee, Karen Bass? Or is this something different? I mean, we saw in the data a lot of Democrats, particularly white and Latino and Asian American Democrats, moving toward Caruso in the final weeks. So it's not a guarantee that that male is on Bass's side.
Well, the only person who didn't get involved with this race was Governor Gavin Newsom. He stayed out of it until the end. He had a pretty good night on election night, too, won huge in his race against Brian Dahle. He also, every proposition that he backed in California, he was on the right side in terms of where voters are at. He may or may not be interested in another job. I don't know. Maybe, possibly. How do you think this all goes for him going forward? Because, Lynn, there's an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal talking about the fact that Newsom may be sort of a loser in all this because he was trying to be the alternative to Biden. Now Biden is strengthened. The National Democratic Party that he's been blasting is strengthened. And maybe it puts Newsom without a place to go.
Yeah, I think that's premature, and I don't think I see it that way. One of the things that came out of Tuesday is this narrative that Trump is damaged, and at the same time that DeSantis is being elevated as sort of the heir apparent to the Republican nomination, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's good for DeSantis is good for Gavin Newsom. Mm. And so people sort of naturally see them as the next big fight. So I don't think I would say that it was a bad night for Gavin Newsom.
And Governor Newsom has spent a lot of time trying to make people think exactly what Lynn just said, right? To try to cast him as the alternative to Ron DeSantis going forward. Where does Newsom go from here?
Well, in fairness to other Democrats, it's easier to win in a plus 29 Democratic state.
Is it?
Like California, just a little bit.
Even with calcification.
Even with all of that. Well, you know, because of all of that to a great degree. But I agree. I think Trump and Biden are inextricably linked in a lot of ways. And I think to the extent that Trump is diminished, I think that that could have a negative effect on Biden's prospects. I also think the president's decision about whether to run is less linked to the politics and more linked to the thing that, you know, dare not speak its name, which is his age. If he were 10 years younger, even 10 years younger, there would not be a question that with his record and performance, of course he would run for re-election. The only reason that he wouldn't is his age.
But it's a real reason. And meanwhile, California GOP, another bad night, Brian. They haven't won statewide since 2006. Where do they go from here? Is there any path forward for them?
Well, the sorting, the calcification, the tribalization of the country has profoundly hurt the California Republican Party because independent voters, centrist Democrats who used to occasionally vote for Republicans like Arnold Schwarzenegger, look at the National Republican Party and say, no, thank you. The culture war, all of the efforts that are happening in the red states, they don't want any part of that here. And so that kind of pushes them back into the arms of Democrats that they may not be thrilled with, but they like the alternative a lot less.
It seems like it's just a battle between Democrats and Republicans aren't even part of the picture in a lot of instances.
Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%.
Former President Trump taking on Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on a week where DeSantis won big in Florida and Trump's candidates didn't do all that well. There wasn't that big national red wave, but there was a red wave in Florida. Let's talk about this more with Lynn Vavreck, Brian Goldsmith, both political analysts here. Lynn, it seems like the 2024 race is already on. Rumors that President Trump is going to get back into the race already. And Ron DeSantis has a big target on his back.
Yes, or Donald Trump has a big target on his back. How do you want to look at it? I think some of the energy behind this DeSantis moment is, I don't want to say it's artificial, but there were other Republican governors who had big nights, Mike DeWine in Ohio, for example. And, you know, nobody's talking about, like, will DeWine get into the 2024 race?
DeWine momentum.
You're starting it here. The DeWine campaign.
DeWine momentum. But it is a narrative coming out of Tuesday, and it's, of course, what everybody wants to know is what is going to happen in 2024. So, yes, it could be the two of them, but then, of course, if it's the two of them, Brian, am I right, some third person will come in to try to soak up, they'll split that vote that Trump has been getting, and a third person will come in to soak up the middle. But then if one person's going to do that, five people are going to do that. And then maybe it's 2016 all over again.
Well, that's the big question. Can the Republicans consolidate around an alternative to Trump? Because you remember that those primaries are largely winner-take-all, and if Trump can hold his 30 or 35% of the party, he can win again. And so I think a lot of the establishment of the Republican Party knows this. Can they be more effective than they were 8 years ago in holding off the person that they do not want to be the nominee again, clearly? That's the big question.
Well, and you see already some folks at the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal and Fox News coming out now against Trump a little bit more aggressively than they had in the past. Trump certainly recognizing that. Does the party feel more emboldened now to say Trump's a loser, DeSantis is a winner? Why would we go with the loser?
Well, I don't want to say anything against Rupert Murdoch here, but I would say that moment has come and passed before, both in 15, 16 and after January 6th, where the Fox kind of conservative media ecosystem went after Trump and found that they were leaders without a following and then scampered back to embrace him because that's where their audience really was. And so we don't know yet whether Trump's, you know, losses, whether being sort of the biggest loser of this election will disconnect him from any of these supporters.
But at that point, Trump was clearly the leader of the Republican Party. Is it possible that DeSantis is becoming such a big star that he's an alternative, and then it becomes not do you want Trump or do you want Biden, but do you want Trump or do you want DeSantis?
It's possible, but we're way too early for that conversation. A lot of people don't know who Ron DeSantis is. Trump talking about him, by the way, is going to help a lot of people learn who he is. So here, like, Trump's instincts to essentialize people, and he's got his nickname, like, you know, if he ought to stop talking about DeSantis because him talking about it is going to make people go figure out who this guy is and learn about him.
Is it smart for him to get into the race potentially this week?
I think his
Trump meaning
his theory of the case is he puts a bunch of Republicans, including people like Kevin McCarthy, on the spot that they have to endorse him or he's going to pull his support and his army of supporters from them. That's the bet that he's making. But I think more than anything else, it's a sign of weakness and not strength. If he were the dominant figure in Republican primaries, he could take the luxury of waiting. He could wait a year from now to announce. But he's insecure, he's threatened, and that's why he's moving forward.
And he loves it. He loves the campaigning, the adulation, the big rallies.
He also thinks that there's a lower chance, I think, that he gets indicted if he's an active candidate because it makes the legal case against him look more political.
Yeah.
Do either of you want to be so bold as to make a prediction whether he's going to be the nominee?
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't bet on that.
Yeah.
I think the Republican Party wants to move past him. It's not anti-Trump, but it's beyond Trump. So if I were betting anything, and it would be a very small amount of money,
that's what I was gonna say.
It would be somebody.
You're betting the field, not Tiger Woods.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Lynn, Brian, thank you so much. Great to have you here for the first
Thanks.
Time. Hope you'll come
Thanks.
Back.
I definitely will.
Our thanks to Brian and to Lynn and to Governor Schwarzenegger and to everyone who listened this week. Before we go, I want to play you something that was totally surreal and something I didn't pay for, something I didn't ask for, but something that made me feel really good. Here's Governor Schwarzenegger endorsing our show.
You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you very much.
Love your work. I mean, you're such a great anchor and news person, and that makes it colorful, your passion behind it, your knowledge behind it. your expertise, the research that you do, and you're always out there in the community and exposing all of the problems and bringing it on television. So I love your work.
I don't think we need anything else other than that. That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Governor. Thank you very much, Governor. I can't even say the check's in the mail. Can you imagine how much you would have to pay him to say something like that? So I don't have that kind of money. That's really great. And here's what's cool. We'll have Governor Schwarzenegger on next week for an extensive conversation about education and a bunch of other issues. So a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger. We've been asking for a year, and they said yes to two things in 2 weeks. So it's crazy how that works. But we're really looking forward to that next week when we see you for more of The Issue Is. Thanks for listening.